Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Alan Epley. Alan Epley is a member of the Kansas City band Shiner. The group recently issued its latest LP, Believe You Me, and its first since 2020. The record shows yet another remarkable stride forward in musicality, composition, and lyrical themes, with songs that dive into the territories of aging, the precarious nature of romantic relationships, and moments that tap into the post-COVID, post-human zeitgeist. Alan Epley recently spoke about the writing and recording of the album, how the band has changed since its earliest days, and how he and his bandmates continue to break new ground in both their musical and interpersonal relationships. That's Alan Epley of Shiner on Into Music coming up now. So you've got this record coming out, and this is the second one, right, since the band kind of reactivated. And just briefly to catch people up to speed, you had decided to make a new album and you released it in 2020. We know how everything went. That must have been a strange time to put out a record and feel probably strong about it. And then all of a sudden, like, where's the momentum, right?
And that's exactly what it was. And also wrapped in all that and this feeling of why me, it was just not me. It was like 100 million of us, you know, and hundreds of millions of us and that were feeling it. So that did ease some of the pain, some, although, and we did sell okay. We made our money back. We invested in all of it and did it. We made our money back. We hired a cool PR firm, but they were able to do nothing. The world was in shock, you know, and everybody was like, they were like, you're talking to me about some band's new record when the world is on fire. And there's like, this is, so it didn't, the press and everything didn't really materialize as much as we would have liked. Cause it was our triumphant return from 20 years earlier. And yet it was kind of like, it was, we just got the, we had to just take it, you know, because there's big, people are dying. This is an important time that we need to just kind of deal with. We still ended up playing some shows in late 21 into 22. We toured on it. And by that time, people knew the record, which was cool. But it wasn't perfect, obviously. And it was a strange time. But we were very proud of the record. And we felt like there was a reason to get back together and be making music. You always are like, well, how do we write like we used to? And so, but we found it and we were proud of that. So it was kind of usurped. The momentum was usurped for sure.
So despite all of that, you kind of regrouped and said, okay, well, let's try it again. let's make a second album. So when did that kind of come into focus that you knew you wanted to make another one and give it a shot?
I would say it was early 2023. And we all were like, we really like hanging out together and being together. It's rare for a group of 50-year-old men to just be able to have this thing and be able to do this. We can go to all the major cities and play for a few hundred people usually, you know, and like, that's also not to be overlooked. We just didn't, we had some momentum from the last record. We knew how to write. We liked being together and playing together. And that's something that you don't just slough off, because the next thing you know, time's gone and like, man, I really wish we hadn't stopped. So a lot of us are kind of feeling that sense of the finiteness of it. We want to take advantage of it. We don't want to let it slip through our fingers and go, oh, we'll do that in 10 more years or whatever. Well, in 10 more years, I'll be a 60, you know, 4-year-old man or whatever. So it's like, we need to get on with this and make some music. We had momentum and we had already remembered how to write together. Our bass player, Paul Malinowski, is a really prodigious and talented engineer. And he owns a studio in Kansas City called Massive Sound. And so our drummer Jason Gherkin lives there. Guitarist Josh Newton lives in LA. I live in Chicago. So we planned a trip to get together every 3 months. So we would take 4 days. I would drive down and Josh would fly in, and Paul and Jason would set up the studio with all of the mics and get everything mic'd up so that when we got together to write, we wouldn't be making demos, but we'd be making the record. And sounds are good enough from the very, very beginning so that if you can nail down most of an arrangement of the song, you got it. This doesn't have to be the rough demos. And now we're going to go back and rework this whole section and all that. It's like, let's just do this, you know? So that worked out. We wrote 13 songs, and I would say we redid the drums on about three of them. And we did some bass parts, a couple of guitar fixes here and there, usually on my parts, because I was usually, as we're recording, I'll usually not sing because I don't know what I'm going to sing yet. I might, you know, kind of scrambled eggs through some lyrics, but really what we need is directives on where to go for the next section because we're all kind of we just wrote our parts. And I would kind of like say, here comes the chorus right here, you know? And so my guitar parts weren't great. The way we started was I would get in my office here and I would turn on like a voice memo on my phone and I would just make a loop and play. And I'd come up, I'd go down to Kansas City with like five or eight little snippets of songs, little maybe one or two sections, but they were really unfinished. And I would bring it down, we would put it up on the computer and listen to it. And they were just like little files. They weren't even like WAV files or anything. And so the guys would go like, no, yes, no. And I'd be like, well, cool. What do you want to work on? So let's start with this one. And we all go in the room and we would stand there and write the freaking song. You know, it was like the way you used to do it back in the for up until time till technology took over and everybody started writing their parts here. Oh, I got my drum part now. It's finished. So I'm going to send it over to Jason. And then Jason sends it over to Kylie. And then Kylie sends it back to Taylor. And then they all put it on. And by the time it's done, it's this thing that everybody's had a chance just to water down. We wanted energy from the room, from the microphones. We wanted to feel it, that this was a real performance. And I truly believe it came through in the recording. I think the recording is significant in that. It does feel forward leaning, but it doesn't sound like a bunch of plugins from your Logic DAW or whatever, and everybody knows what those sounds sound like now. Everybody's kick drum sounds the same, and on really good records too, it sounds very homogenized, Some of my friends have put out great records, but the sounds of the record, but I would say we avoided that. Paul made such a great recording. And then he and Mario Quintero started the mixing process, and Mario finished the mixing process. Mario from Spotlights, really talented singer, songwriter, engineer in his own right. But that was really it. That was the process, and it worked.
Well, I want to talk specifically about the writing because as you're saying this, it occurred to me it's like that thing about the more you stay in the practice of writing, like that probably enables you to do things like get in the room and say, okay, here's where the course is going to go. You know that much of a song. You have that much experience that you're not intimidated or like, oh gosh, are things going to dry up? It's like, I can do this. It's not rocket science.
It's not rocket science. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we also are not afraid of something that might suck or might not work out. We are okay with that. We write things that we don't like sometimes. Sometimes, like for the last record, we wrote a lot of things that we didn't keep. They were kind of cool, but it wasn't ready for the record. But we're okay to fail, to be like, ah, this one sucks. And we're okay to work through difficult moments where, the drummer Jason is like mad about a part. I've said it before, he doesn't like playing beats that are in 3-4 or 6-8. It's the 3-1-2-3, 1-2-3. He doesn't like it because it's so limiting in your options. It's like, do 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 da do 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 da. He's like, you can do that, or you can go boop dot dot boop dot dot. And there's like two or three options, right? And he doesn't like it. So one of the main first songs we wrote is called "Endless Summer." At that time, it was called "COVID Diaries." That was the song that we called "COVID Diaries." And there's a couple of them that were written like right out of that time, and he found his way through it, but he was mad at the part like for a while. We were working on that song, and I know how it goes for the first writing of the first song. You're in it, you're just kind of getting your feet wet. We're learning how to do it. It kind of sucks. You take a sip of your big gulp, your drink or whatever, you know, you're waiting, waiting, waiting. So we probably wrote on that song for 5 or 6 hours in little different takes. And then at a certain point, you say, okay, Paul, let's press record and see what we got. It's not ready, but we can go in there and listen. Does this suck or is it good? We did it. And he didn't like his beat and he found it. He thought it through and turned it around and made a great beat, which is very atypical for a three kind of beat. And that was kind of our springboard into here's where we're going, you know, and we can do this. We know how to face hard times where we might have gotten into an argument like 20 years ago, or like, you know, he'd be like, I'm out of here. I don't want blah, 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 you know, and like, well, I'll do just like play the part. Or I would have something worked out for him, you know, and he doesn't want that. And I don't want that. It's always better to get input from your band. I've already made a solo record that I really love, and I can do that. And that's what my solo record was, all my decisions. You know what I'm saying? It was all me. And this band is not all me. I am the seed writer on 90% of the songs, and Josh is a great writer also, and he always puts in, it helps a lot. But I'm the seed writer on this, but I don't want to take full credit or blame, you know, for especially if it sucks, if it's not good. This is a group process here. So one of the main things is that we know how to deal with our differences now and deal with each other, just being older men, you know, and the fact that we really want to do it. I think we're in our 30s, late 20s and 30s, we were like, I'm gonna go do something else. This is weak. This is boring, or I don't like this, or we're creative differences and everything. I think we understand how important this is, our relationships with each other, and how much we love each other and working together. And we didn't want to. We know how to deal with each other now, so we don't take it for granted.
I'm so glad you brought up Endless Summer because there's a couple of things with that. One is that beginning is like it made me kind of laugh because it's like so cool, and yet it's like that's just right at the edge of over the top, isn't it?
It's true. It's true.
And then there's that chatter too at the beginning of it, and I was like, oh yeah, they weren't recording this remotely. They were in the space. So I thought that was a really wonderful moment in both senses on the record.
Well, I appreciate that. We there's a lot of those beginnings of the songs that we really wanted to keep. I wanted to keep, and the drummer Jason wanted to keep. Paul, as an engineer, so was like, let's get rid of these stupid clicks. Nobody cares about this. I was like, but you're hearing us in the room, and it's proof that we're all there, and that if this is like, he was like, oh no, fuck that, blah, 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 I don't want to do that. So I ended up talking him into a couple of these different spots. There's a part at the end of one of the songs called "Not Too Much." A couple of songs later, if you go to the very, very end of the song, you can hear I go, "Man, that was great!" Or I'm giving Jason Gerken a pat on the back after he got done this 7-minute song. And he was like, oh, it's okay. And it kind of goes up. But it was another little piece of that proof that we're there. We're making this song together. We're standing in this room together, making a song. And I think a lot of bands don't do that all the time anymore. You know, I mean, you're supposed to stand in there and write that song in the room, and you're going to get a better product, I think, in my opinion.
In that process, I wonder if you ever encounter moments where it's like, there'd be an easy way to do this. Like, we could just lean back on some old Shiner tricks and get through the song. But then you gotta say, like, time out, let's not do that. We could, but it's not going to yield the best results.
100%. And there's a couple of those moments where those songs did not make the cut. It was clear that those songs were not what serves us best. Shiner fans will see through it, and that we only write for ourselves, quite honestly. If we're not making ourselves happy, if it doesn't rock for us, if we don't get done and go, yes, then it's not going to get released. If we go, Shiner fans would love it, but we don't want to, we don't want to play it. And those songs do exist, but they didn't make the cut. And maybe they'll be for another thing, for another something else. But we would abandon those tunes, we really would. There's songs out there. There's certain bands that know how to just endlessly reinvent themselves, and they're not trying to be the most original and redo it. And if you dig in, there's always something there, and I'm not the best at it. There are certain bands that know that can, and artists that can just dig into the infinite nature of what they do, and it's always kind of cool, and I'm of course drawing a blank on who can do that, but it does exist. Those people do exist. And I mean, don't think too hard about it. Just keep writing and don't try to be too original and just write a good song. It doesn't have to be the most original thing in the world. It needs to be a really good song. I think that's the end of the story.
I was curious about the song "The Mutiny" because, yeah, I have some ideas about the lyrics, but I thought that those were really interesting lyrics and they really made my ears prick up.
Mutiny was almost one of the throwaways. I thought it wasn't going to be one to make the cut. That was the second of the tunes we wrote. It was called COVID Journals, or that was COVID. Yeah, it was COVID Diaries, was Endless Summer, and Mutiny was the second song. It came off as a little too much of a Chavez rip. The band Chavez, we've stolen from them endlessly, and we have no problem doing that. The lyrics came about with the idea of like a first mate reporting to his captain that we're fucked now, captain. I usually don't write in like a setting like that where I'll place a couple of characters in a setting, and but that's what this was. This was a first mate coming to the captain and saying, "We're done now, Cap, because we got a breach on the port side. We're taking on water. We're starting to sink. There's a mutiny. The men are already done. I cannot believe I'm in this situation with you. And why? How did I get into this? And I can't believe I'm going to end up dying with you. And like, this is how did this come around? And this kind of situation that a person has found themselves in. And I just found it really compelling. And yeah, it spoke to me for some reason. I don't know why, but I really, that kind of scenario and somebody finding themselves in a, how did this, what have I gotten myself into here? Which does happen to all of us.
I read it as somehow being of the time, like of the geopolitical situation now. But that wasn't your intention, though.
I love it though. That's great. If it, whatever, however it speaks to everybody, whomever, I think that's fine. And it does, as a metaphor, an analogy, it totally transfers. And maybe I was, maybe I was subconsciously channeling that.
Let's also talk about Asleep in the Trunk, which you also made a video for. And I thought that was an interesting tune. And I wondered if that was always going to be the opener, if that just revealed itself immediately as something to like take us into the new album.
Not in my sequence. That song would have been the middle of side two, like as a kind of a zenith of the record. Like as the high point. But Jason Gherkin, our drummer, felt very strongly that you start out with what is maybe the most impactful song straight off the bat. And I was like, I'm just tired of fighting for my sequence and my way all the time. I'm tired of it. I'm over it. And it was very refreshing to have Jason so emotionally involved and wanting his thing, because usually he's like, "Ah, rat's ass, whatever. I just want to rock. Where's the beer?" You know how drummers are, He's like, "I don't care. What do you want the art to be, Jason?" "Ah, rat's ass." He's like, "As long as it's cool, whatever." He was very involved with a lot of it. He was involved with the sequencing. He put a lot of thought into it. And so what you see there is his sequence with a couple of little changes, mostly, but say sequence doesn't matter in the current world of streaming and all that. Actually, it does matter, and people do listen to records, and people do listen to things in order. And they're still going to bounce around and get what they want out of whatever their songs once they've digested the record. But sequencing does matter. That song in particular happened very quickly. That was one of those phone voice memos that I had recorded. I'd make a little loop, and the first loop was da 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 da, just kind of a looping thing. And I was like, and I always let it speak to me. When I'm writing, making a loop is like having a conversation with some other ghost you in the room, right? And it instantly you make that loop, just like a little 2-note, 5-second loop, and let it speak to you. What does it do? And then you play to that, and it's like I'm getting inspired by myself, you know, like something that I put out, but it comes back to me in like kind of a third person. And that song was written like that. The lyric and the layout happened very quickly. Once we put the arrangement together, that song came together in 2 hours, 2 hours tops. And then the whole big middle section was written there with the band and the big pinnacle of the song. Everything was like, as you hear it, we left that day and drove home to our respective spots, and it sounded like that. That song sounded like that. And which was really, we were just like, can you fucking believe it? I mean, this shit's incredible. We were so stoked. Like, we were really thrilled with a lot of it. Everybody was just listening to all the songs. We were just like, oh my God, what are we doing here? We're the best band in the whole wide world, you know? Those moments that you're supposed to have. And we feel very gifted and blessed to still have these as 50-year-old men, you know? We're like, the lyric for the chorus just fell in very naturally. For some reason, I keep thinking that we're still in love. And believe you me, I've tried. And then the last bit, I've been sleeping in the trunk while you drive, and I will always be your ride or die. That came in later. But the very first bit, I keep thinking that we're still in love. You know, I thought we were doing this thing, you know, and like that many couples have had these relationships. This doesn't read as biographically. It's more of like an historical fiction, you know, in a way. So my marriage is sound, and yeah, we've been together for 26 years, 30 if you count all the time before, and we just lived together. And so we're really good. Although anybody in a long-term relationship, I don't think you ever really just take it for granted. You know, I don't. Shit can end anytime. You know, I mean, if things go like it matters, you know, I mean, how I look, you know, to my wife and how we treat each other and how we interact and all those things are important. And she doesn't present her worst self to me, and I don't present my worst self to her in the knowledge that we're always going to be together, you know, and you can take advantage of that kind of stuff. We always have to. We want to be good for each other and make this a pleasant time together. And we don't take it for granted. But that lyric, I keep thinking that we're still in love. And believe you me, I've tried. I took that and kind of took a little bit of a darkly humorous vibe to it, you know, where that she was actually, not only was she done with him, she's going to get rid of him. In fact, you know, so she zip ties his ass and puts him in the trunk and then drives him, drops him off in the water, in a like a mob style type of thing. And I've never written like that. I usually am not that direct, even in like writing a narrative. It's not really, I don't usually write in that way, even with like Mutiny in a certain way. But like, this just spoke to me, and I lyric writing is hard for me. Like there, you meet a lot of, I'm sure you do. You meet a lot of songwriters who, that first lyric is just like that's it, and then it tells me what chords to play. And I have never written that way, and I don't have poetry, and I don't have a journal, and I don't have that. So writing lyrics is tough for me. You know, it's the last thing. If it works out syllabically and kind of makes sense, okay, you know, if the melody line is cool, I like it, you know, and I'll make it work out. I'll make it turn into something and make sense, you know. But it's not something I say, oh, I'm a lyricist and I'm a really good, you know, lyricist. That's not. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people in like post rock or whatever I'm in, whatever this is, that's not the prerequisite for being in this band. You know, a lot of times you can't even understand a lot of lyrics from many bands, you know, it's like intentionally obscured, you know, and they're ja, 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 ja. I've done it for the last 30 years of my life. You know, what's he saying? I don't know. I don't know. What's he saying? It's very important though. And then you start to poke through some of their lyrics and it's like, yeah, let's not let's just leave it hazy. And but I felt okay about it. Honestly, my writing my solo record is one of the first times that I felt pretty solid about the lyrical content about that whole thing. And I was like, okay, all right, I can do this. It only took me 35 years to learn how to write a proper narrative, but yeah, so Asleep in the Trunk kind of reflects that.
Well, it's interesting too because I was thinking on this record, I was like, man, the there's care with the vocals and the way that things sit together and everything. These weren't lines that were written by somebody who was just thinking about screaming over guitars in the corner of a bar.
No, and that's it always matters because I know the fans really pay attention. They really pay attention. And like I say, I'm not writing for the fans, we write for ourselves. But once we've decided to do this, then their opinion does matter to me in a certain way. I want to make something good, you know? I mean, I want to make it, and your fans, your longtime fans, will be brutally frank with you. There's a guy from Czechoslovakia, is big fan, or I think he's from Czech Republic, and yeah, he's from Prague. And he was like, last record I had another reference to like Kings and Queens on the record. He was like, Alan, again with the Kings and Queens, are you kidding me? And I was like royalty, it's you know, you can, that's valid, I can use. So there's no Kings and Queens on this record. I've already played that card, so literally.
You've been listening to a conversation with Shiner's Alan Epley. The latest Shiner album, Believe You Me, is out now on Spartan Records. You can learn more about the band, including upcoming tour dates, at shiner.net. Believe You Me is available for purchase via the group's Bandcamp page or at spartanrecords.com. You can learn more about Epley's work outside Shiner at alanepley.com. And you can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org. We welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And it's always a great time to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next time.